Hello, I'm Sam, and this is Pilgrim Pit Stop. It's a podcast about following Jesus through life's highs and lows. And there's a new episode every other Friday. So I would really love it if you hit subscribe and tell your friends about it as well, if you enjoy what you hear. Here's a little clip of what's coming up today.
Maybe everyone else in the household is thinking, this is nuts. You know, this guy should not be made welcome. And yet you are making him welcome.
All right, let's go. Hello, welcome to Pilgrim Pit Stop Podcast. It's wonderful to have you here. I am recording this on the 11th of January 2021, and I'm about to go and have a conversation with my dad, Neil Thurigood, who is a minister in the United Reformed Church, but is also an artist and creates lots of biblical paintings. He does a really great series called The Bible from the Air, which just depicts famous biblical scenes from a kind of bird's eye view. And if you remember back a few episodes ago, I had a chat with him about his process, about why art is such a big part of his life, why it's really been key to his walk with God over the years. So you can go back and listen to that episode. It's called Painting the Bible. And now I'm just going to have a follow-up conversation with him, really, about this amazing painting that he's created. So I'm just about to go into his studio, and he's going to show me the finished painting for the first time.
Yeah.
Oh.
Hello.
Moment of truth.
Moment of truth.
Whoa, come on.
There you go.
Oh, that's amazing.
So completely finished now.
Wow. Oh, that is so striking. I love the shadows down here.
Yeah. It comes alive when you can really get the shadows.
That's amazing.
Going.
Wow. So that is, and you've got your sketchbook there, which was.
So that's where we started ages ago.
Yeah.
Back in November.
Wow.
And we just had a very simple kind of thinking aloud kind of sketch. So it's interesting. Some of it has stayed pretty much as I thought it might. And then, as is always the way, I think, actually, once you start to get the paint on the canvas, the thing has a life of its own, really.
Yeah.
And you just let it evolve.
Wow. There's lovely little details, like the dad throwing off his...
Yeah.
His cloak.
Throwing off his cloak.
Wow.
And the cloak is very distinctive, so you can see he appears three times.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously he's there as well.
No, sorry, four times he appears.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it follows the arc of the story.
So could you sort of talk us through the painting? If you've
yeah,
got
sure.
A kind of journey of it. What were
so
your decisions?
As we said... I suppose theologically there's a couple of things that strike me about most of the parables, but I think this is a supreme parable. I think this is one of the most, it's one of the most complete parables in the sense that it's one of the longer ones, and it's one where Jesus actually tells a story. And when Jesus is speaking in parables, there's often an important element that is narrative. So he's drawing people in as he's a storyteller, far more in a way than he is a theologian in a modern sense. His way of doing theology is often by either demonstrating it through signs and wonders and miracles, or mm-hmm. or by telling stories. And so this is one of the bigger stories. So it demands, I think, a big painting. And as we discussed, it's I deliberately have painted it on two canvases so that you get a real sense now that the left-hand canvas is leaving home and coming home again, and the right-hand canvas is being in a foreign land. And in a sense, so it's also talking about being lost and found. And I think it's also, as in many of the parables, Jesus exaggerates things. He amplifies things so that the point really sinks in. So for example, it's a fairly wealthy family mm-hmm. that these two children come from. Otherwise, you don't imagine he'd be particularly asking his father for his share of the inheritance and then having enough money to go off and live a riotous life somewhere far away. So already it's an it's for the folk listening at the time, they would already be saying, okay, so Jesus is talking about the sort of family that most of us don't belong to, the sort of family that, you know, the king belongs to.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, Jesus talks about how the guy goes and lives a debauched life. So it's not just that he goes off to a foreign country and, you know, has a bit of a nice time and so on. It's got to be really stark that he's having a debauched time. He's wasting the money. He's living a life that is immoral and vacuous. But it is also a life that is chock-a-block full of good things, you know, nice things.
Yeah.
I always think of the famous Rembrandt painting of this story, where Rembrandt he paints himself and his wife sitting on his lap as if she was a harlot. And they're dressed beautifully, the room is marvellous, and the table is heaped full of food. And that's the point, you know. It's Jesus is, I think, wanting to point out that leaving God behind doesn't automatically lead to a life that is empty. It actually leads to a life that is full. It's just that it's full of stuff that can be deceptive.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then the point is Jesus ramps it up even further, because then there is a famine and a drought. And so this place that used to be a place of plenty becomes a place of nothing, of dust and of death. And at that point, the son is kicked out from his friends and he's on his own. And then, as we mentioned last time, you know, the ultimate kind of sacrilege, the ultimate horror for a wealthy Jewish boy to end up wanting to eat the food being fed to the pigs of a foreigner. I mean, that is just layer upon layer upon layer of how degraded can you become? Lost can you become? And then this beautiful bit about coming to his senses and starting the journey home, and then getting home with that wonderfully prepared speech, you know, Father, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Only then Jesus kind of gives us yet more striking exaggeration. The Father, it turns out, clearly has, in a sense, been watching and waiting for this to happen. And it's maybe years. I mean, Jesus doesn't tell us how long it is, but you kind of get a sense, I think, this is not just, it's not that the son went away for a few days or a week
mm-hmm.
and then came back, because it's a country far away. So that suggests that it would take a long time to get there, a long time to get back. He's probably coming back on foot. So he's walking. He's on a pilgrimage. He's on a pilgrimage back to his father, but he knows that his father will no longer accept him as a son.
Mm-hmm.
Because by asking for the inheritance, he's effectively said, Dad, I wish you were dead.
Mm-hmm.
And in a society that, you know, thinks a lot about the significance of honouring your father, he has dishonoured his father. His father has every right to kick him out. So he's coming back thinking, you know, my best chance is that I become a servant. And then that lovely vignette of the father is there watching and waiting, sees him coming, recognizes him. And there's not one fraction of a second of anger, of repulsion, of I told you so, of how dare you. There is just the only thing that happens in that part of the story is a love that is so all-embracing that you can have even said to the father, I wish you were dead, and the father lets you come back because you've come back. And so you're welcomed. And so the father, we're told, runs to meet him, which at the time would be, again, it's the father demeaning himself. Then there's the great party. And I mean, I think we mentioned last time, often in our Bibles, it's entitled The Story of the Prodigal Son or The Lost Son. And I think that does it a disservice because I think Jesus then very deliberately twists the knife again for us as we listen, because we discover that the older brother is also lost. He's still there, he's in the family, but he's lost in anger, he's lost in
self-righteousness,
he's lost in contempt, you know. And there's that lovely turn of phrase where he starts to talk about, you know, this son of yours, no longer this brother of mine. So for the older brother, the son has died, that relationship has ended. That relationship is irredeemable. And he despises the fact that his father is not playing by those rules. So it's so then the father has to go out. And the final bit of the story is the father goes out to his other son, who is now lost in anger, in bitterness, in recrimination. And he says, you know, it was as if this son, this brother of yours was dead. And now he is alive. So it's also a resurrection story. So as a story, I mean, the more I painted it, the more I just, you know, it's again, I think the joy for me of painting these pictures of the Bible, and maybe for most artists who paint the Bible and who are themselves believers, I suspect that painting the stories of the Bible brings it alive for me as a believer. I mean, I think I've dwelt on this story by painting it in a way that I haven't by reading it. And I suppose my hope and my prayer is that other people might enjoy the art helping them to dwell on the story.
Mm. I because you're viewing it from a bird's eye view, you're able to sort of see the whole story play out, which I guess is quite rare. You know, in depiction, did you look much into depictions of this story in other artworks?
Yeah.
That focused in on particular kind of vignettes within the parable?
Yeah, so I think what a lot of people have done is they have pulled out, I mean, it's a very dramatic story, so you can pull out episodes within it. So I guess most famously, you know, you've got Rembrandt's Return of the Prodigal, where Rembrandt very much shows the father enveloping in a great hug, enveloping the son. Other artists, I think, that I had a little look at, I mean, some have dwelt on how do you kind of paint the moment of transformation for the son. So there are artists who've painted a sort of a close-up of the son with the pigs and kind of how do you portray someone coming to their senses. Rembrandt, again, painted the son, you know, being prodigal, being living the exotic, extravagant lifestyle. But yeah, you're right. In a sense, I suppose what my style of doing it from the air does is it allows you almost to paint a map of the story. And as I mentioned when we talked about it the first time, this is the first time ever that I've tried to paint the whole parable. I mean, all of my other paintings from the air, I've done exactly that. I've dwelt on one moment. I think the beauty of this one, but I think it has to be this sort of size. It would be very difficult to make this work on a smaller scale, is that it gives you the whole story from, you know, kind of top left running clockwise and ending bottom left.
Yeah.
I
think because it is a very clear pilgrimage narrative as well. It's got a very clear journey to it. with these separate locations.
Yeah.
I think that gives it a really clear flow.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're ending where you begin, that it's clearly a different time of day. I love how you've done that, actually. I've just noticed how you've, the same building, but it's clearly the sun has moved and it's a different time of day. And you've got the people kind of gathering outside the house for the family kind of gathering party thing. Whereas at the beginning, it's just the father and the two sons.
Yeah.
Oh man, it's very, very good. I love it.
Yeah, and I suppose it also, I guess as I was, again, I mean, this is where the painting took on a life of its own. So it felt important to somehow try and suggest sort of that coming home and getting lost have different feels. So the path that the son takes at the beginning is very definitely just kind of a road in the desert, but it's a very wide road. So there's a little bit of the kind of Pilgrim's Progress, the Bunyan, you know, that sense that the road of temptation is often a very wide, easy road, and the road of faith is a much narrower road.
Mm-hmm.
So the road that goes from where the son has been born to the foreign land, with where there's this great party going, and there are people swimming in a lily pond, there are naked bodies, there's a barbecue going, there's just lots of people.
Lots of colour as well.
Lots of colour, lots of flowers, so it's very verdant. So that's in a sense, it's even more luxurious and flowery and verdant than the home the son has left behind. So at that part of the story, I think I was just trying to get a sense of theologically, it feels really good. You know, it feels like I've made the right decision. I've arrived. I'm in a really good place. And again, playing with the sense that the grass and the house and the pond and all the people are kind of, they're protected. They're in a secure place. There are trees and hedges that keep the rest of the world out. And there are even a couple of, you know, what I kind of imagine to be guards standing at the threshold to kind of let you in or out. So it's a very, it's a gated community. It's a privileged, private place where anything goes. And it's got a really wide way in, and there are two other people who've greeted the son on the way and who are kind of encouraging him to join them. So you're made welcome, because of course he's got lots of money, so everyone wants to be his friend. And then I think I was conscious in painting it that the canvas then has a much darker feel, and it's slightly chaotic. There's lots of colours, there's greens and pinks and yellows and browns and purples and, you know, there's just a lot of colour, much more mixed, but actually it's kind of chaotic. My feeling for it is that it starts to feel more ominous, a bit.
Oh, definitely.
You know, more threatening. The path becomes very sinuous, and actually quite deliberately the path vanishes at one point. So where the pigs are, the path has actually vanished, and the sun is literally there with the pigs. There's a way in, there is a way out, but you've got to find it. And that's my way of kind of doing that.
Cleverly, this kind of quarter, bottom right quarter, is the one where the son is just completely on his own, whereas the other ones he's surrounded by other people. Yeah.
So that's where he begins to come to his senses. There's a dead tree, there's kind of brambles growing over the path, and there's a sense of wasteland, I think, and the path is very narrow, and you know, you could fall off it, because again, I think the journey of faith back to God is one in which, you know, even for someone like me, I've been going to church all my life. I know that it's not hard, actually, for faith to kind of collapse. I've watched it happen in the lives of others, and I've known it in my own life. So there's a sense of, there's a bit of a wilderness there, but there is also a sense of journey direction. But then deliberately, as he gets closer to home, in the midst of the wilderness, suddenly there's there's green, there's palm trees, there's flowering bushes by the roadside. The road is getting wider, to the point where the father is coming to greet him. Everything is lighter. So there's a sense of that it's a fertile place again, that he's kind of coming home into something that feels lush and good. But I suppose the other thing that I'm hoping I've managed to capture is that there is no wall around the father's house. It's open to the chaos. So whereas, you know, when he's in a foreign country, there's much more of a sense of it's a guarded enclosure that you're allowed into. But only if you've got the right credentials, i.e. money, or you've chosen to be there. The father's house, which has its door open in the bottom there, the door is deliberately open. It just sits there surrounded by openness. So I suppose I was trying to get a little bit of a sense of, as the son comes home, part of the surprise is because, I mean, if you think about it, it's not just that the father welcomes him back. By throwing the party, the father is actually saying to the household and to the servants, you have to welcome him back too. And indeed, the fact that the father goes out and argues with the other son, you kind of think, well, the other son is probably speaking on behalf of a lot of people in the family. Maybe everyone else in the household is thinking, this is nuts. You know, this guy should not be made welcome. And yet you are making him welcome. And I think that's exactly the sort of tension that Jesus wants to throw us into. Because, of course, the whole point of the parable is to say, well, think who you are. Which son are you? Have you got lost? Would you like to come home? I've come to find those who are lost. So, you know, don't complain when you find me eating with sinners, making friends with tax collectors, making friends with Roman soldiers. You know, I've come to find those who need to find their way home, which is a very powerful thing for the church to recognize, that the job of the church is never to be an enclosed space for the holy to huddle and say, you know, the world is going to pot, we're safe. The job of the church is to have its doors and its heart permanently wide open, because that's what this parable says God is like. And I think the father has to go and wrestle with the older son and maybe the whole household in a way and say, if I can accept him back, you have to accept him back too. And so that's another challenge, because, you know, I think for those of us who've been in the church all our lives, it's quite a challenge when new people come into the church and say, I'm as saved as you are, but I'd like to have different sort of music, you know. We it's a real test. I mean, we often sing many hymns about the church and its openness. And it's easy, someone said to me, it's easy to sing the hymns about the church being a place of welcome, you know, and there is a hymn where the chorus is all are welcome, all are welcome. It's much harder to actually live that out in reality, because often not everyone is as welcome as everyone else. You know, there are some people we find quite difficult to welcome, and maybe we find it sometimes difficult to welcome ourselves. You know, we find it difficult to believe that God loves us as completely as anyone else. And it's a story about all of that.
Mm. Amen. Wow, thank you so much.
Okay.
Amazing to sort of see your process and to see this amazing painting come to fruition. So I will link in the description through to your site. I might actually link through to the specific page that has this painting on, because I think people will want to check it out after you know, hearing your description of it. Thank you so much.
I appreciate that.
And thank you for listening. You make sure that you've hit subscribe so that you're the first to hear about future episodes. Thank you to Johnny Davies for creating the theme music, and to Thomas Thorogood for the jingles. There's also a link in the description where you can support the podcast further by buying me a coffee, which just is a fun way of showing your support. But yeah, most of all, thank you, Dad, for for sharing this amazing journey. And yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you for your interest.